Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots nonprofit radio station in Laguna Beach from anywhere in the world on kx93.5.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. Right now, here's the Importance of Being podcast on KX93.5. Okay, we'll be back in just a bit to get the show started, but right now we'll have a little music.
Words come to the cafe that the old man is ailing. His eyes, they are failing, and the weather's took his hands. He wears a ring on his finger that was shaped from the bone of some white man in Missouri who spilled whiskey on his wife. His name is Joseph Cross, and he was raised by the mission. Just one of 100 Indian boys who wouldn't tie his shoes. And he cried the night his grandpa died. He told him in a vision, stay close to the ways of the rattlesnake, stay close to the ways of the grizzly. He has traveled the sacred circle, and he has traveled the white man's grave. He's killed for hunger, his buffalo brother. He's killed for anger, and in the white man's name. In the 1919 chill of December, when the bear and the rattler lay sleeping, hardly breathing, it's a penny to the kitchen boy to run fetch Sister Lydia. Go tell her that old Indian lies sleeping, hardly breathing. And someone said it don't seem right to give him a white man's funeral. And someone said that soon as not, float him down the river. Touched the ring or said a thing about his chest, where it looked like a bear had ripped him and a rattler kissed his cheek. For he has traveled the sacred circle, and he has traveled the white man's grave. He's killed for hunger, his buffalo brother. He's killed for anger, and in the white man's the sacred circle, and he has traveled the white man's grave. He's killed for hunger, his buffalo brother. He's killed for anger, and in the white man's name.
Worlds apart, so I fell from the street. There'll be bridges for us to mend, but I'll stick through it. Oh, I swear. There'll be mountains for us to climb. There'll be days when the sun won't shine, but I'll stick to it. Oh, I swear. It's along the road. There'll be so many ways to go, but I'll stick to it. Oh, I swear. Oh, I swear.
All right, we're back. This is KX93.5, and you are listening to The Importance of Being Show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman, and today I have as my guest David Huxtable, and he is linguistic, or he knows languages. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing? Wonderful to be here.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great, thank you, yeah.
So, you know a number of languages.
I do indeed. Yeah, I love the idea of being linguistic. I'm on the linguistic spectrum.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so I've kind of managed to pick up about 10 so far in my life.
Wow. Well, and can you really say that you know 10 of those languages? Because I know, I wouldn't even say no. I know some words mm-hmm. from four.
Yeah, I can't even count the ones that I know. Words in or stuff about. I absolutely love just kind of, I find out about a language and I'll go and look it up and think, okay, that's the kind of grammar that one has. Or no, so those 10.
Wait, what?
we'll get on to that one. So those 10 are, they're not all at the same level.
Okay.
But at some point in my life, I have been able to spend a weekend speaking just that language.
Wow, and, that's pretty good.
Have conversations about what's going on in the world, and
so you can stuff like that. You can get around with more than please and thank you and pointing.
Yeah.
Okay, and so how did you come to be? Were you always curious about languages?
Yes. Or,
oh, go.
Yes. Yeah. I mean. My mum used to tell this story of how on Sunday mornings in the UK, they used to have, on like the equivalent of PBS, mm-hmm. they would have a whole series of language learning programs.
Oh.
And at 3.
And everybody else would be outside playing.
Well, it's Britain, so they'd be sheltering from the rain, but they wouldn't be watching the language programs. Whereas me at 3, I would be just sitting right close to the screen. Doing the French followed by the German followed by the Spanish followed by the Italian, And then there would be a NOAA program for our Asian viewers, and there would be a news and music show in Hindi.
Oh, my.
And so I would watch all of those. And my grandfather came around one Sunday morning and said, "What are you doing to that poor child? Why are you forcing him to watch that?" And my mom said, "You see what happens if you turn that TV off." So, I mean, I don't remember that.
You don't remember the wrath?
No. But and she was probably not telling the truth. I was a gorgeous child. I wouldn't have known.
Right.
But I also used to go, like, as a kind of 7-8-year-old, I would go to the library and get out books on mad languages like Punjabi and just find out what they were like.
We don't even have those kind of books in our library.
I think it was just one of those libraries where it was like, okay, here are someone's given us these books.
Oh,
we better
random,
put them in the language section.
Yes. And so you had this thirst for language. You learned a lot of it through TV. And so as an adult, did you then go in a different direction, or did you start traveling a lot? How did you really cement?
Yeah, so I think that then led to a kind of to a curiosity about the rest of the world.
Okay.
And I think also at a pretty early
age. And I guess
age,
you could, you know, get along there so it's not, like, terrifying.
So from an early age, I kind of knew that my life would involve living in different countries.
Okay.
And so I started – I went to university and did a degree in linguistics.
Oh, okay.
Where I was able to do – so I'd studied French all the way through our equivalent of high school.
Okay, yeah, I have French –
and then French for the first 2 years of university. Second year was actually in France.
Mm-hmm.
And then this course I was doing was a linguistics course. And so
why don't we explain to people what that is?
Okay.
I'm sure people have heard it.
Yeah, it's one of those words that people have heard, but right. Maybe kind of, you know, it kind of washes over you.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so it's the science of language.
If you huddle down, it won't get you.
Yeah, it's the science of language. So, and then there are kind of different branches of that. So there's phonetics that looks at speech sounds.
Mm-hmm.
There's syntax that looks at grammar.
Okay.
Morphology that looks at how words are built up.
Okay. All right.
And then stuff like, you know, sociolinguistics. So how people use language in society and how language kind of identifies groups.
Okay.
And all that kind of stuff. And psycholinguistics, where it's like, you know, where... what kind of psychological attachments language has. Neurolinguistics, where it lives in the brain. And...
this is all kinds of language.
Yeah.
And so since you're, you know, studied on this and you're proficient across a broad range, what is language?
Oh, that's a good one. I think I'd probably have to look back at my university notes. It's a system of communication.
Mm-hmm.
It's an arbitrary system of communication.
How do you mean?
So, you know, so we do have some words, like cuckoo, for example, that where, you know, someone heard this bird going cuckoo and thought, oh, I'm going to call that a cuckoo.
Right.
But dogs don't say dog. Trees don't make a kind of noise that's like tree.
Right.
So there's no
that's a barker.
Absolute kind of connection
right,
between
right,
right. the symbol
the,
and the thing
label
it signifies.
Or
yeah.
whatever we put on top of it.
So that's the kind of arbitrariness.
Okay.
And then there's other stuff that I can't remember.
Oh, well, I think that's good enough for government work or nonprofit radio.
Yeah, quite possibly. Yeah.
Okay, so you studied linguistics. Then you came out on the other side knowing a lot of languages, and then you traveled about.
At that point, I only knew English, French, Chinese, and a bit of Russian.
And so you get going. Did you get recruited into be a 00 agent?
Lots of people ask me that, and I have to kill them.
Oh.
But I'll let you off.
It's just us talking
okay,
right now.
That's
no
cool.
one else will
yeah.
know.
The death squads are out there. But anyway, no is the answer to that one. I started off as a language teacher.
Okay.
So I went to Ecuador and was a teacher of French for the Alliance Française, which is a French government-sponsored kind of cultural institute.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, because I'd studied Chinese, I wanted to go to China.
Sure.
So I managed to get myself a job in a Chinese university teaching English
okay.
to English teachers.
Mm.
Mm. And then from there, I got a job with a UK cultural entity teaching English, and I worked for them for about 30 years.
So let's go back just a little bit. You're traveling to these different countries. You've learned language, you know, in language classes. And certainly that would prepare you to teach English to Chinese teachers of English. What was it like? Was there a big difference in conversational language that you would run into in the streets? Like if you're trying to order a taco or a something, a hat?
Could I have a taco and a hat, please? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And so did you – well, so I took French for – I don't know, a couple of years in high school, and then thought, oh, it'll be easy to take it in college. And but I, you know, I did okay in the class, but I never really felt like I had all the connections together, and that I, in fact, I didn't think I was linguistic at all. So were you different about that? Did you, how did you practice, I guess?
I think I had a similar experience where the kind of French that you learn in school is pretty much written French. Even if you're speaking, you're using kind of the written grammar and the written word order. And there's actually a big difference between written French and spoken French, much bigger than there is between written English and spoken English.
Okay.
So I think when you then go to a French-speaking country, everyone's saying the sentences backwards. And the stuff that you say sounds odd.
Yeah,
you know, it's that thing where you don't understand what they're saying.
Right, right, right.
And there's all kinds
of reasons for that. You can pick out a word or two here or there. Yeah. And, okay. All right, so we're going to take a break. And what I'd like you to do is say, we'll be back in some language.
Well, 马上就回来了.
All right, you heard it here first. This is KX93.5. You're listening to The Importance of Being Show. We'll be back in just a bit.
Drive around, nighttime, nowhere to go. Melt me down, I'm like wax to your jokes. Lost and found, knocking heads, laying low. And there's no point reliving crimes to lose this. Still wanna waste all my time. I wanna waste all my time. Still wanna waste all my time. I wanna waste all my time with you. Fake it. Help me turn a blind eye. We should rip it straight out. Then let's do our very best to fake it.
And we're back, as promised, except we don't have the horses. So this is KX93.5. You're listening to The Importance of Being Show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Saturday morning from 8 to 9. And today I have as my guest, codename David Huxtable, international spy, 00 agent.
Man of mystery.
That's it. Okay, so, but we're not talking about, you know, taking out bad guys or espionage and intrigue today. We're talking about languages. And so, David, you know or claim to know 10 languages.
Mm-hmm.
And when we left off, in the first segment, you talked about how you came to be this person. And when we left off, you were in China about to take out a bridge or something. No, teaching English to Chinese professors who are going to teach English.
Indeed. Yeah.
Okay. And so you traveled about. And so let's talk about some of these adventures that you've been on.
Okay. Well, one thing I was sharing with you in the break was I was working in Beijing, and I managed a project in Pyongyang, in North Korea.
Yep.
So I was living in Beijing, but the team was in Pyongyang. And the first time I got to go and kind of hang out with the team and get to know them and do that kind of line management stuff, I landed at the airport, and the local manager said, "We're going to have to fly by the seat of our pants because he's dead." So I said, "Who?" And I then realized, oh,
there's only one.
And it was when Kim Jong-il died.
Okay.
Which they hadn't announced. They actually announced this while my plane was in the air.
Oh.
And so that was quite scary.
So you're in the clear on that one.
Yes. Yeah. it was nothing to do with me. But quite scary in that no one knew what was going to happen.
Right.
Worried about things like, you know, was there going to be anything to eat?
Oh.
Would restaurants just shut?
Right.
So all of my appointments with the various people in the education bureau and stuff were all cancelled. And I got to go to the lying in state.
Oh.
So there are photographs of me in the North Korean press.
Oh.
Bowing my head before the beer, B-I-E-R, because they love a bit of archaic English in North Korea.
And so the B-I-E-R is?
It's like coffin, I think.
Oh, all right. All right. Mm. Nice.
It was very emotional. I mean, you know, to be in a city where absolutely everyone is bawling their eyes out.
Did you cry?
It was moving. I mean, I'm waiting to go into the mausoleum where they had him. Excuse me, where they had him laid out. There was this soldier standing in front of the door, trying to fight back the tears.
Oh my!
And then the doors open and everyone is weeping and wailing and throwing themselves on the ground.
Sure,
it's moving.
Sure. Yeah, and I guess it's a big deal for them, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the guy was a god. Every kind of the first textbook that you get when you start learning to read is, he is our great leader. He loves us.
Instead of Jack ran up the hill.
Yes. We will crush the imperialists.
It's mother's milk. All right, so you accomplished your mission in North Korea.
By getting out alive.
And set them on a proper course. and so then what happened next? Where did you go?
So so China was actually my last job for the British Council, which is this UK cultural organization.
Right.
And then I retired from there and moved to Southern California.
All right. And so you just lay out in the sun, go surfing all the time?
Surfing would be interesting. Since I have no sense of balance or any kind of coordination, I do like lying in the sun, but the rest of the time I'm working as a leadership coach.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, how does that play into knowing a lot of languages? Or is it just something aside?
I think it's kind of part of that. So I think the language thing comes from just this absolute passion for people.
Oh.
And the amazing, rich diversity of humankind.
So a curiosity about their culture,
yeah.
and really want to get in under the hood and understand what they're saying.
Yeah, and individuals. I think, you know, there's just this, every individual is different. And so discovering those things. And I think it's reached a time where I want to give back. So having worked in all these different cultures, led really, really diverse teams, but in terms of like ethnicity, culture, educational background, even like field of work.
Okay.
Really, really mixed teams.
Mm-hmm.
And discovering a bit about how to get the most out of people, how to encourage people to kind of reach their potential and give their best.
Yeah. So, you know, hurry up in a bunch of languages.
I do. And, you know, getting people to work together and understanding that everyone's different and everyone has different ways of kind of getting the most out of themselves.
And so what do you do in terms of the leadership? What's the nuts and bolts of what you're doing now?
Okay. So I work one-on-one with people, having maybe like a one-hour conversation a week.
Okay.
Where coaching is all about, there's a lot of it's about listening.
Oh, and yeah, that's a lot of communication is about listening, but most people like to talk.
It should be about listening. But one of the things, so we all know it's great to share your problems.
Right.
To kind of say, I've got this thorny issue and I don't know what to do. And the person listening is kind of on the edge of their seat, waiting to jump in and say, I know exactly what you mean. The same thing happened to me. And what you should do is.
Yes.
And then they're just going to give you their advice.
Right. They just download that recording. Yeah.
Based on their 2 seconds of listening to your problem.
Well.
And based on, I mean, we all do it. I'm not saying everybody does it but me. We all do that. And so what coaching, and you know, I studied to become a coach. And one of the tough things is to, A, learn to really, really listen.
Okay.
Without thinking about what you're going to say next.
Oh, so you can't be you know, positing.
And not giving advice, not saying, well, what you should
How
do
can
is,
you lead if you're not telling people what to do?
Because people
you just have a stick.
The answer's in them.
Does not compute. Okay,
it definitely works.
Is it hiding in there somewhere?
It is hiding in there. Or we kind of, you know, like when you lose your keys. Sorry, I'm coughing again. I'm not usually up this time in the morning.
What is that? That's bad form.
Is it?
No, just kidding.
You know, you lose your keys and you think, where did I put my keys? And you kind of pat both pockets and you go and look on the table where you normally have them.
Yep.
Then you pat both pockets again.
Sure.
And then you go and look on the bedside table and then you pat both pockets again. And it's a bit like that when we're trying to solve problems. We just get into this groove of, okay, I'll try this, this, and this. I've tried everything and it didn't work. So having someone saying to you, okay, so when you say you tried everything, how many things did you try?
Oh.
Uh-huh. Is there anything else you might try?
So the universe isn't those three things.
Yeah. And that kind of triggers things in your mind that you think, oh, actually, yeah.
So the process of I guess, saying it out loud, sharing it mm-hmm. with someone, triggers some other processes that allow the log jam to, mm-hmm. to be broken up and the flow to continue. Okay. And so what is it like being a coach?
It's really enjoyable, actually, because people tend to have these kind of aha moments.
Okay.
I was working with someone yesterday. And he'd started off by saying, well, I don't really know what, I've not got anything particular, an issue that I'm burning issue that I want to work on today.
Right.
And then he came up with something and he'd been talking about it for a few seconds. And then I could hear all of this frantic typing. And I'm thinking, oh. Are you answering your emails? Or?
Yeah.
And he said, sorry, it's just, I've just had this idea of what I'm going to do and I just want to write it down. And kind of being part of those moments where people kind of see their way forward is really,
but you know,
magical.
as a leadership coach, aren't you a little disappointed that you didn't play a larger role in terms of actually injecting the idea into their head in your words?
No, because I think that doesn't. And I mean, in terms of modeling leadership as well, people. You can get the most out of people.
Wait. So we should probably define leadership because apparently I have the wrong definition.
Not necessarily.
Is it bossing people around?
It's not bossing people around.
Joe,
it's
do that.
It's kind of inspiring people to move in a particular direction, to get stuff done in a way that they get ownership of.
Do they get a taser?
Most leaders, I think, probably could do without a taser. Yeah.
Okay. So you're inspiring people to get things done, and you oftentimes are not the puppet master.
Mm-hmm.
You're helping them find the answer in themselves.
Yeah, and finding their way of doing it.
Okay.
Because if you tell them, if you say you need to do it like that, that's your way. And it's not necessarily going to work for them.
Well, it's like in the Egyptian days when mm-hmm. you build a pyramid for yourself. You know, you can't do it all by yourself. So you let the other people share in the joy.
Yeah.
Or a big statue of you.
Yeah, don't give anyone any ideas about building statues of themselves.
Yes, that's right. We may have some North Korean listeners.
Or closer to home.
He listens all the time.
Yeah, I bet he does. We don't know what the motivation of the people who built the pyramids was. They may not have had that much choice in it. But they may have done. They may have been inspired. You know, this is going to be a wonderful thing that we're going to be proud of. It's going to last for thousands of years. Our great leader, the pharaoh, will be able to, like, put in a good word for us in the afterlife.
Right, when his friends come over.
Yeah, because all those people, the people that built all of those amazing cathedrals in Europe, they weren't kind of compelled to do it.
Yeah, they don't talk about their management process.
No. I don't think they were forced to do it. It was this kind of collective, wouldn't it be wonderful if we built this great monument?
So that's what you're selling?
Not necessarily. But if anyone does want to build Chartres Cathedral,
how to get people to build a monument in your honor.
How to get people on board with your vision.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll take it down a notch.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to take a break. And but before we take our break, you can say we'll be right back in another language.
Okay. On reviendra tout de suite.
Ah. This is KX93.5, and you're listening to The Importance of Being Show. We'll be right back.
I met you. you opened up your door. I couldn't believe my luck. You in your new blue dress, taking away my breath. A cradle is soft and warm. Couldn't do me no harm. You're showing me how to give into temptation, knowing full well the earth will rebel. Into temptation, muddled of nervous words. Never amount to betrayal. Sentences all my own. And the price is to watch it fail. As I turn to go, you looked at me for half a second with an open invitation for me to go into temptation, knowing full well the earth will rebel. Into temptation, safe in the wide open arms of hell. We can go sailing in, climb down, lose yourself when you linger long into temptation, right where you belong. Guilty, get no sleep in the last slow hours of morning. Experience is cheap. I should listen to the warning. But the cradle is soft and warm. Temptation, knowing full well the earth will rebel. Into your wide open arms, no way to break this spell. Break this spell.
Okay, we're back. This is KX93.5. You're listening to The Importance of Being Show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Saturday morning from 8 to 9. And today I have as my guest, 00 Agent, the man who Ian Fleming modeled James Bond after, the guy who's taken out leaders of enemy countries all over the world, David Huxtable.
I took them out to the cinema.
Yeah, yeah. You want some dim sum? So here we are. We're well on our way into February, and many resolutions from January have fallen by the wayside. So many of us are not working out like we said we were going to. We're not losing weight like we said we're going to. And some of others of us are not learning that language that they promised themselves mm-hmm. that they were going to learn this year. So what stands in the way of those kinds of things?
I think there's lots of stuff. And some of the things that stand in the way of people learning languages is also what stands in the way of the weight loss and the exercising and
completing your mission
yeah.
when you're...
making sure that you get to that sushi bar with Putin. It's like, you know, put your shirt on, Vladimir. We're going for sushi.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's stuff like, I think particularly languages, because you have that baggage from school yeah. where there's this kind of idea that you have to either have this kind of innate talent for it.
Well, there's certainly those people who come in right off the bat and they're like, they hear it right, hear it well, and then they can just kind of say it and it just flows for them.
Mm-hmm. But I think that the problem is when the opposite of that, that people get labeled as, you know, you're not good at languages.
Slow children.
Yeah, just like any labeling, you know, if you're told that you're a slow reader or you can't sing, you're not good at music. No one tells you that you don't have an innate ability for geography. People just learn geography, right?
Right?
But we have this idea that you have to be specially gifted
yes.
to learn a
yes.
language.
Right.
Which goes against the fact...
Or a superhero.
Or some kind of superhero, indeed. Which goes against the fact that we all learnt one.
Mm-hmm.
And the vast majority of people on the planet know at least two, probably more likely three on average. Because
mm-hmm.
in most of the world, it is perfectly normal to speak different languages at home and at work, different languages with different relatives, and also to learn languages throughout your life.
Hmm.
So it's a kind of cultural thing that we tell ourselves.
A die-off of cells, and so you don't have to worry about the stuff that you didn't learn because it's too late now.
No, actually, there's some really interesting research on how language learning is very beneficial for the brain.
Hmm.
So it's a bit like, to use a computer analogy, it's a bit like your brain kind of reformatting new bits of itself.
Hmm.
Because each language is apparently stored in a different part.
Really?
So if you learn a new one, your brain says, okay, reformatting unused area, and we're going to put Navajo there. Right? And this has implications for things like dementia.
Yes.
That there's apparently, I can't remember, it's 4 or 5 year on average, bilingual or up people. If they suffer from dementia, it's 4 or 5 years later.
Really?
Than monolingual people.
Hmm.
There's more, you just as likely to get a stroke as everybody else.
Right.
But because you've got those extra formatted bits.
Oh, yeah, you can access.
You can survive. You can recover from the stroke quicker.
Huh.
Because the brain can then use those other bits.
Wow.
And there's some research going on in the UK at the moment about working with Alzheimer's patients who've already got very, very serious symptoms
mm-hmm.
of teaching them another language.
Right.
And that then helps.
Because you get the construction yeah. crew in your brain back in action.
Yeah.
Huh.
So all kinds of excitement like that. So that idea of there being a critical period for learning languages has pretty much been disproven.
So that means that's not I can't use that excuse anymore.
You can't use that excuse.
It's too late now.
Yeah.
And so how would you suggest that people approach this? Because I think a lot like the working out,
mm-hmm.
they're like, oh, yeah, it's going to be great. I'm going to go and, you know, the people will be looking at my muscles. And next thing you know, I will look like the guys on TV
indeed.
Selling the workout stuff.
Indeed. Yeah. Yeah. And as I said, there's the problems are connected. It's having manageable goals. So like being realistic.
Oh.
Are you going to be able to write poetry in Russian after a week's study? No.
Okay. Okay, so just tone it, bring it
do
down.
Do you want to? You know, so right. there's this idea about, you know, I don't want to make mistakes. Well, why not? I want to learn perfect grammar. So you're going to spend like 8 years of your life learning all this perfect grammar so that you don't make mistakes.
Right.
Or,
and then when you get there and you try to speak in that way, the people will be looking at you funny because that's not how they speak.
Or they know you're foreign anyway, so what are you trying to... You know, I actually met someone the other day who said that she'd lived in Latin America, but she'd never learned Spanish because she couldn't roll her R's.
Okay.
So I said, that was R's.
I have a... Yeah. I have the same deficiency.
And I said, well, but they know you're not from there. So if you don't sound like you're from there, what have you got to lose? You know?
Yeah. You can only go down a couple points for that.
And also, like, knowing why you want to do it. So if, with the gym example, I imagine if you want to have the rippling muscles, you're going to have to put a lot of effort into it for a sustained period of time and for a pretty long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But if all you want to do is to kind of do a bit of cardio a few times a week, then set that as your goal, it's more achievable.
That's possible, yes.
Yeah. And so with language learning... And it's kind of more complicated because with teachers, they've got the textbook. They're going to teach you the days of the week and the months of the year and how to tell the time.
The numbers, yeah.
And then you have to, if your aim is to be able to go to Mexico for the weekend and
very be little polite of that's going
to
be valuable.
People, say please and thank you and be able to order food or drinks in a bar.
Right.
If someone asks you the time, you can show them your watch. Yeah, you can get your phone out. And so you have to be able to say to the teacher, I'm not really interested in this stuff. Can we do something more practical?
So.
And I'm definitely not interested in conjugating the perfect continuous passive subjunctive.
I get it. And so if it's a... If it's a tool that you're developing that you can actually use as opposed to some abstract study, it'll stick better. You'll have some sense of purpose as you're doing it.
Absolutely. Because a lot of those books are designed to be tested. You know, we kind of use language learning in schools and universities as a kind of just a kind of gate to get people through.
It's a filtering system.
Yeah. Can you prove that you can... go to really, really boring classes and learn boring stuff.
Sustain
and
your effort.
Regurgitate it in a test.
Right.
And so that's fine if that's what you want to use it for and if that's your goal.
Sure.
But if it isn't, if it's go and have a fun time in Mexico and not be the dumb foreigner, then you're going to need different stuff.
Yeah.
And you need to know what your goal is.
And
writing, for example. You know, all of those, a lot of the courses put... a lot of emphasis on reading and writing. You're probably, if you're going to go to Mexico for the weekend, you are not going to be sending many emails to Mexican people. You probably want to speak to them. So learn that.
All right. So that's your tip is a manageable goal, a relevant goal.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you apply that in the rest of your life?
Well, so we were talking about exercise, having a manageable goal, a reasonable goal. But also, I mean, I would recommend working with a coach for those reasons that we were talking about. Yeah. So you know, what is getting in your way? Are you telling yourself that I'm going to fail?
Yes.
Here I go again. Oh, I've missed the gym. That's it.
You know,
I knew I would not meet this great resolution that I made. I'm just that kind of person.
It's very funny. I was talking to a friend this week, and I was trying to explain some of my process, but I said, you know, it's kind of like a baseball player out in the outfield. A novice, when the ball gets hit and they know it's coming to them, they put their glove up immediately, and they start worrying about how they're not going to catch it.
Mm-hmm.
A good pro baseball player spends all their time watching where the ball is going to go and trying to get there. They could both just as easily miss it. But the first guy spends his entire time in the missing it. And if by chance the ball happens to hit the glove, they might catch it. The other guy spends all his time figuring out where the ball's going to go and trying to catch it. And so there you go.
Indeed, yeah.
So you could go to a coach that could help you take some of that negative energy and the worrying about not doing it well or not doing it right out of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's also good to have a coach who kind of holds you accountable. Mm-hmm. So you've got someone that you say, right, I'm going to go to the gym 3 times this week. And the next time you speak to the coach, how many times did you go to the gym? Once. Okay, why?
Oh.
What's going on there? What's getting in your way?
Okay. So if someone wants to be a leader and they're looking for a coach, where should they go?
www.davehuxtable.com.
Well, there we have that. Is that that's Huxtable like
The Cosby Show.
Yes. When he was the father of America.
Indeed.
And now not so much.
Yeah. Yeah, it's when that show first aired in Europe, it was wonderful for me because I didn't have to spell my name anymore. But now I'm distancing myself more.
Yeah, I'm not that guy. All right. Well, David, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed our chat. Yeah. And okay, guys, this is KX93.5. You've been listening to the Importance of Being show. I don't know what's coming up next, but it's going to be great. So have a great Saturday.
Joy to know.
Friend.